interactive prayers, interactive announcements. If you all talk back to me while I'm up here, it'll totally throw me off. That's what I like about being the minister. I talk, you just... And I have my protection. Why are we talking about Lamentations now? And we have so many visitors today, and I'm going to talk about death and loss and grief and lamenting. To lament is to mourn or grieve out loud. Weeping, wailing, gnashing of teeth, those are phrases Jesus used. And Middle Easterners lament so well. We see them on television just wailing after a bombing or a death. My family would call that carrying on. But I wonder if the wailers are less likely to need one of Molly Steele's grief workshops 10 or 20 years down the road because they lamented. So the reason we're talking about Lamentations today is that we're heading into the holidays when we will talk for the next several weeks about gratitude, faith, peace, love, and joy. And maybe it's the darkness in me, but I always feel obligated to remember not everyone will have happy holidays. Some will be lamenting more than celebrating. And grief is a natural part of life. It happens to us all. The Bible is full of grieving. Jesus was really rattled when he heard John the Baptist was dead. And of course, the disciples were devastated by Jesus' crucifixion. King David, the greatest king who ever lived, had a life full of loss. We talked a few weeks ago about David's grief when his friend Jonathan was killed in battle. He also lost a son, Absalom, in battle and grieved, even though Absalom had been trying to overthrow him as the king. And there's a strange little story about the death of David's son with Bathsheba. The baby was sick for 7 days. And David prayed and fasted and lay on the ground for 7 days. No one could get him to eat or get up. But when they told him the baby had died, he got up, washed up, had a meal, and went back to work. Even the servants were shocked. So we'll come back to that. Death is born with us. It accompanies us through life. And we experience death in many ways. The cells of our body die all the time. Where's the body you had at 19? Already dead, I'm afraid. And in the course of a lifetime, we lose loved ones, we move away, we separate from people, places, and things. Life brings endless opportunities for lamentation. So we might as well acknowledge it and feel it. We know that people who stuff their grief have chronic health issues. We know others who are so surprised by loss that they just stop believing in God because belief didn't keep things from happening to them. But in a sense, death is what gives life meaning. That ticking clock prompts us to live as much as we can while we're here. And we learn and grow from the losses, even when they are terribly painful. I heard recently, your wound is not a wound, it is a portal. A portal is an opening, but to what? The book of Lamentations in the Old Testament is 5 long poems grieving the destruction of Jerusalem. Remember a few weeks ago, we talked about the two kingdoms. Israel in the north was overrun by Assyria, and thousands of people, especially the leaders, were deported to other countries, unfamiliar lands, different religions. The same thing happened to the southern kingdom of Judah about 200 years later. It was overrun by Babylon, and Jerusalem was sacked. The temple was destroyed, and thousands of people were driven out. 586 BC. It is a pivotal date in Jewish history, like Pearl Harbor Day or 9/11 is for us. Their history is before the temple was destroyed and after. because God lived in the temple. This shook their view of the world and God to its foundations. Let me read you some of these laments. How lonely sits the city that once was full of people. Jerusalem remembers in the days of her affliction and wandering all the precious things that were hers in the days of old. When her people fell into the hand of the foe and there was no one to help her, the foe looked on, mocking over her downfall. So it goes on and on, and they, of course, ask, why did this happen? And they conclude, well, we must have sinned, and God is angry with us. Look and see if there is any sorrow like my sorrow, which was brought upon me, which the Lord inflicted on the day of his fierce anger. My soul is bereft of peace. I have forgotten what happiness is. So I say, gone is my glory and all that I had hoped for from the Lord. It's carrying on. And there's some victim consciousness here, we would say very sniffily, well, that's just victim consciousness. But haven't we all kind of felt this way about something? And this works its way up to abject pleading. Remember, O Lord, what has befallen us. Look and see our disgrace. You, O Lord, reign forever. Your throne endures to all generations. Why have you forgotten us completely? Why have you forsaken us these many days? Restore us to yourself, O Lord, that we may be restored. Renew our days as of old, unless you have utterly rejected us and are angry with us beyond measure. The end. That's how Lamentations ends. That's why we don't use it a whole lot in Unity. But what's interesting to me about Lamentations is that it's not grief about individuals. It is grieving everything they knew, their way of life, their religious home, their sense of how the world works, what's important, what kept them safe, what gave life meaning, all seemed to be gone. Now, in exile in other countries, they eventually learned that God is everywhere, always with them, not just in the temple. But we can empathize with their grief for a situation, a place, a time in their lives that was gone forever, like our younger bodies. Our past experiences are already gone. And some are easy to let go. You know, I was happy to graduate from college. I remember it fondly. I don't want to be there now. I enjoyed my previous career as a reporter. Don't miss it. I am frankly glad I'm not still married to my husband. But, oh, come on. Should I ask for a show of hands? I thought so. We're trying to grieve here. Come on. Sometimes a rite of passage is so sudden or dramatic that we have to redefine and rebuild the reality we live in. When we suffer a major loss, our perception of ourselves dies as well. The illusion of control falls away. It's a hallway. When the door has closed on life as we knew it. And in working on the book, Hell in the Hallway, I had a long, interesting interview with Kelly Issola. You remember her? She's a Unity minister who spoke here a few years ago. And the past 2 years, she has been working as the transitional minister in Joplin, Missouri. Unity of Joplin hired her right after their church building was wiped off the face of the earth by that F5 tornado that hit Joplin in May of 2011. Part of Joplin was destroyed, a 6-mile trail of destruction, like Jerusalem. The hospital, the high school, hundreds of homes and businesses, and the Unity Church, all gone. Look around at everything that's in a church. The musical instruments, the sound equipment, the office computers, chairs and tables and kitchen stuff and kids' supplies and even the walls and ceilings, they had nothing. They still had a congregation, but they did not have so much as a pencil to start over with. Kelly said, "Disaster brings out the best and," this is a quote, "the absolute frickin' worst in people." She says, yes, initially there was this sense of banding together for recovery, but over time, I mean, just imagine the squabbling that could happen in creating any church, even in good times. That would be challenging. But these people were emotionally wrecked already. No one in the congregation died, but the town was gone, friends were gone, some of their children's friends had been killed. And the way they had always navigated the world didn't work anymore. Kelly said, people under that much stress regress. They fall back to old consciousness, old theology, and the Joplin congregation did that for a while. But over time, they used that tornado as an opportunity to rebuild themselves, not just to find another building. They did buy a new church within 9 months. They had insurance for that. But it took longer to clear away the debris that had piled up within the congregation over the years. Emotional, psychological, spiritual debris. And consciously, they built new ways of being together. Some of them ended up saying the tornado was a blessing. It blew away some unhealthy patterns and forced a fresh start. So many people who have been through unspeakable loss, any kind of death, destruction, illness, eventually say they are happier, more connected, self-realized and conscious, glad to be alive every day. It is possible to be renewed in spirit after a loss and still be sad that it happened, still wish things were different. You may not ever get over it, but eventually you will live with it and in some ways may live more deeply, better. Someone said, wisdom is nothing more than healed pain. And that's another way to think about grief, a natural healing process, something we can work through if we don't try to stop it, if people aren't telling us how to feel and what to do. When you take Molly's workshop on grief, the first thing is to look at all the bad advice we've been given about grief. Our society really wants to make it go away. It's uncomfortable and a little embarrassing. So what do we do with our losses in life? How do we lament? To grieve out loud, literally or metaphorically, we have to be paying attention, feeling our feelings, letting ourselves express and release whatever needs to come out. There's no shame or guilt in expressing feelings. We are strongly attached to our physical reality, the presence of other people, a place or a life situation, a way of living. And if we lose that, it hurts. There's no recipe for recovery. Staying conscious is the hardest part. Staying aware of our own feelings even when they're not pretty. You might feel anger or resentment around a loss. Have you ever been mad at someone for dying? Or mad that they didn't die sooner? Been relieved they were finally gone? Imagine the complicated feelings of the people around here who lost their homes in the flood. Who do you get mad at about a flood or a tornado? That's why people so often bicker with each other. Well, you wanted to buy the house on the creek. Or they find someone to blame. Why doesn't the city have better drainage around here? Part of lamentation is feeling whatever you feel. Now, you might not express it to everyone. The point is, don't stuff it and don't judge yourself for feeling it. Don't worry about not thinking positive for a while. We're cut some slack on that. If grief takes its natural course, we surrender. We forgive a person, a situation, God. We find support, human or divine, and we reach a place of acceptance. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross said her only regret about the five stages of grief was calling them stages, because they are not a progression. It's more like a stew. They happen all at once. Denial gives your mind time to catch up with the facts as they are. Anger is just protest. This is not what I wanted in my life right now. Bargaining is woulda, coulda, shoulda, guilt, maybe shame, how things could have been different, how I could have been different. We blame ourselves when nothing else makes sense. Depression is a form of exhausted surrender. There is nothing I can do. It is the way it is. And then acceptance is acknowledging the facts. Still don't have to be happy about it, but from acceptance, we can start to move on. I heard a speaker recently describing those five aspects of grief, and he said when an event makes the news, we stop after denial, anger, and bargaining. Think about a mass shooting. Denial. Oh no, not again. Then anger. Who did this? Why did this happen? And bargaining is how it should be different. We need more security in schools. We need a better mental health system. And by then, something else happens and we move on to the next story. Is that there's no chance for public depression or acceptance. Usually. Rituals help with that. I remember watching President Kennedy's funeral on TV. There was public depression that weekend. The 9/11 memorial in New York represents public acceptance. When King David got up after the baby died and went about his business, the servants asked him, "How can you do that?" And he said, basically, he had prayed for a week to save the baby. He wished things could be different, but they weren't, and nothing would change that now. The story is shocking even today, but it's a story. And stories had to be memorable because they were handed down orally for centuries. The point of the story is about moving through grief to acceptance. He bargained with God as long as he could. He reached a state of exhausted surrender, and he accepted the truth, even if he was still sad. Now, no one expects it to happen in a week. Like any healing, grief is a process, and every person handles loss differently, and it takes as long as it takes. Rituals help us say goodbye, surrender, and accept. Funerals are rituals of finality. Those makeshift memorials, the piles of candles and flowers and teddy bears, help us acknowledge what is. And monuments represent the memories we will carry forward with us. In sudden losses, we might need to go back and create a ritual to say goodbye. Kelly Issola said before the Unity congregation started cleaning up after the tornado, she wanted them to walk through the wreckage and just remember and honor what had been there. Oh, this was the children's area. Oh, this was where we had just installed that new stained glass window. One of the roles that church or spiritual community plays is to help each other through loss. Sometimes with ritual, sometimes just with human support, knowing you're not alone. It's why we have a prayer list and a care team in this church. But I've been thinking a lot lately, the greatest comfort might be to reframe death. Our society, generally speaking, postpones death as long as possible, goes to any length to avoid it, won't talk about it or plan for it. Which is funny, considering it is the most predictable part of the human experience. Everything else might be a surprise, but death really shouldn't be. Death is part of the process of life. It nourishes life. For every bite of food we eat to nourish ourselves, something had to die, even plants. For every improvement in our lives, something was left behind. We're often tempted to label those changes bad, but people who seem to have lost the most are often the ones who say they were broken open, that a shattered heart is also an expanded heart. The Hindu word for death means great bliss. It is the state of oneness we enter after we leave our bodies. Great bliss. We might want to reconsider the death penalty as the worst thing we can do to someone. I sentence you to great bliss. Rumi, the Sufi poet, said not to mourn when he died, to celebrate the anniversary of his death as a great wedding, because for him it was unioned with the beloved. Can we reframe death and loss? Can we see divine order in it, the natural way of things, destruction and creation? As we approach our holiday of gratitude, can we give thanks in all things? Can we really name it all good? I don't mean you should pretend everything is fine when it isn't. That's the whole point of lamentation, to grieve, to mourn, to feel a loss. But when we give thanks in all things, we are acknowledging the divine presence no matter what has happened. There is only one presence and one power in my life and in the universe. Holding on to that is such a daunting spiritual challenge, we have to say it together every week. Those of you who come a few minutes late may not know, we say that together every week. So just the other day, the Daily Word was about this very idea. I am at one with God. Pain may be part of life, but suffering is optional. We suffer when we believe we're separate from God, when we feel unloved, unprotected, or perceive life as hostile. If I ever feel ruled by such thoughts, I turn to the truth. There is only one power and one presence, God the good. Anything to the contrary is untrue. During hard times, I seek God's presence in me. In the secret place of the Most High, I build an internal fortress of truth that withstands any fear, anxiety, or distress. In the silence, I take refuge from any struggle or suffering. I abide in comfort, joy, and peace beyond any circumstances of the world. Gratitude does not require us to feel good. We can appreciate the human journey even when it hurts. We can lament our losses. It's an opportunity for our soul's growth. It is a chance to open our hearts to life, even if they've been broken open. So let's take these thoughts into meditation. When we meditate, we relax even further into our chairs, breathe deeply. You might want to close your eyes and turn within. The secret place of the Most High is that place within us where we know our oneness with God. Not a physical place, so much as a soul place, a consciousness, a level of awareness. Where we know our own divinity within the one mind. This is where peace passes understanding. No matter the outer circumstances in our world, and this is where we remember divine order is at work in the universe and in our lives. One presence and one power. The power that keeps the planets and galaxies in their orbits, keeps our lives in order. The presence that humans have always known was with them is with us through every loss, death, event, misunderstanding, in all the good times and the bad. Those are simply our labels for the human journey. But in this secret place of the Most High, we remember we are here as spiritual beings. Our souls sought this experience. Even knowing it would hurt sometimes. And so in our human pain, we find that place of understanding and peace and order, where we know that all is well and we can be grateful. And so it is. Amen.
Join me in singing Alleluia. Alleluia.